WNYC is supported by the Vital Projects Fund and the Museum of Modern Art, now presenting German Expressionism, The Graphic Impulse, a large-scale exhibition featuring 250 Expressionist prints, drawings, paintings, and sculptures through July 11th, moma.org.
Hi, this is Brian Lehrer. You're listening to WNYC On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads available when you want to listen at WNYC.org and iTunes. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we have lots of great guests coming through in the coming days here on The Brian Lehrer Show. Tomorrow, Metropolitan Opera Director Peter Gelb. Where is he? He's in Japan, I think. Monday, Larry Kramer. Tuesday, Elliot Spitzer. Wednesday, Billie Jean King. A lot to listen for every day here on The Brian Lehrer Show. Billie Jean King, by the way, working with the Michelle Obama Get Fit Anti-Obesity and Childhood Health Campaign. So we'll talk to Billie Jean King about Let's Move and more next Wednesday. Meanwhile, New York City doesn't have a monopoly on contentious education or housing issues. The Syosset-based civil rights organization Erase Racism has been working for 10 years to change what they call persistent racial segregation in education and housing on Long Island. The president of Erase Racism joins me now, Elaine Gross. Elaine, welcome to WNYC. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you.
How do you think racial inequality is different on the island than in the city?
Well, on Long Island, because we are so fragmented and because we don't have things like good public transportation, it's very easy for young people, for example, to grow up in their communities, and which are very racially isolated, and to not have interaction with other people. And I think that in the city, it is easier to get places. And so even if you are in a segregated area, chances are you've been some other places, too.
Listeners, on Long Island, for the next few minutes, call us up and tell us if you see segregation in your communities, in education, in housing. What do you think explains the persistent segregation in housing and in the schools? If you have lived both in the city and on Long Island, is racial segregation and inequality different, qualitatively different in the burbs than in the five boroughs? Do you have a story about discrimination? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Nassau and Suffolk residents, 212-433-9692 for Elaine Gross, the president of the Syosset Long Island-based Erase Racism. And Elaine, you wrote an op-ed this week claiming that Long Island schools are separate and unequal, and you said there are 124 racially segregated Long Island school districts. Tell me what you mean by segregation in this context.
Well, first of all, Long Island is one of the most racially segregated suburban communities in the country. We were the third, and when we do the specific analysis for the 2010 census, we're not anticipating any major change in that. So, and not only are we currently segregated, but we have this long history with embedded racial segregation. A lot of people know the story of Levittown, with deeds that forbade people who were not white from being able to purchase homes there. And also, if you purchased a home and you were white, you could not resell your property to someone who was African American who was not white. So we have a very long history of residential segregation. And then when all of the school districts, 124, which is an extremely large number for two counties, the school district lines mirror the residential segregation.
And in other words, they're not officially segregated, of course. That would, the kind of thing that you were just describing about 1950s Levittown would be illegal today. We know that official school segregation has been illegal from, you know, Brown versus Board of Education in 1954, but it is all about the housing. It's that lower income kids who tend to concentrate in the Black and Latino communities are denied entry to an equal education simply because they don't live in the districts. Syosset, I guess, being one of them, with a very high tax base and a $500,000 school superintendent for 7,000 kids in one of the quote-unquote best high schools in America, right?
Well, and I also want to just clarify a bit, because we've also done research around the housing discrimination. And almost every community on Long Island, there was at least one housing complaint, one discrimination complaint. So the housing discrimination complaints are across income lines. That's one myth that people think, oh, well, this is only related to poor people. And then the other thing is...
And so you're talking about redlining, which is illegal, but it goes on.
Redlining and racial steering as well.
Mm-hmm.
By realtors. So that goes on at all different kinds of income levels. But the other thing about the schools is that you are correct that not only are they racially isolated, but there is concentrated poverty in those same communities.
So that you don't have the property tax base. If somebody lives in Muttontown, you know, that it's just generating a whole lot more property tax that goes into the schools than, you know, than if you live in Roosevelt or something.
Correct. You know, you need the commercial base that helps, and you know we're talking about communities that don't have that. And then you, even though in those communities they are taxed at a higher rate, it's not generating enough revenue to compensate.
Let's take a phone call. First phone call, Enrico in Baldwin wants to shout out his town as a positive example. Is that right, Enrico?
Yeah, Brian, thanks. That's right. My wife and I, who were both white, adopted two non-white children several years ago. We were living in an almost all-white town in Suffolk County, and we poured through census data and other records to try to find a place where we thought we'd find we'd find a more balanced place to live in, and we ended up in Baldwin, and the new census data has sort of supported that decision. If you went through it, you'd find it's one of the most integrated places on Long Island, and it's integrated in a way that other communities where you might find good census numbers aren't, in that it's not sort of, even within the community sometimes there's segregated neighborhoods, so the kids may go to school together but end up going home to different neighborhoods. Baldwin is a place where the kids go to school together, go home to neighborhoods together. And, would put a plug
and
in anybody looking
to
live in an integrated place on the island, come to Baldwin.
That's a great plug. Is there a conscious ethic there? People talk about this in school leadership and so forth?
There is a community group that we're involved with of sort of parents that have been talking about this. There's a new board member elected to the school board who's been talking about this. We're consciously trying to sort of promote Baldwin in this way, and I think it's just getting started. Yep.
Thank you very much, Baldwin on the South Shore. Any quick thought on that? Have you looked at Baldwin, Elaine?
Yeah, we do have. It's not that we don't have any schools with racial segregation, that are more racially integrated, but when you look at the statistics, if you divide the schools, let's say, into four categories, and you look at the school districts that have the highest performing schools, less than 10% of the African American students and 14% of the Hispanic students have access to those schools. So you're really talking about the vast majority of the students really having access to schools that are not the high performing schools.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not talking here about the skill level of the students or their interests or any of those things. It's just out of the box. They can't even have it, that exposure.
Peggy in Long Beach, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peggy.
Hi there. I just wanted to share a happy story with a sort of sad ending. I was raised in Westbury, by two parents who had been involved in the civil rights movement, and it was very important to them that we grew up in a racially integrated neighborhood. And Westbury was one of those rare places when I was a kid. And we had a wide range of friends, and it was terrific. And my older brother and sister went through the public schools, and it really started to erode. And the white families really started to put their children into private schools. And by the time I got to high school, the high school was so poorly funded and struggling so much that they had to put me into private school. And it was just a heartbreak for them to have to do that. But I do think my childhood, it was unique in that I think Westbury was one of those very few Long Island neighborhoods that really did have a strong African-American middle-class neighborhood. Many of the black families I went to school with had more money than we did, and that it's an experience that has stayed with me and shaped, I think, my worldview throughout my life. So I'm sorry that it's not that way anymore there. I think it's really changed over the years, but it was a wonderful way to grow up.
Thank you for your call, Peggy. I appreciate the story. 2010 census, by the way, confirms that Long Island is one of the most racially segregated regions in the country. There was also an 8% decrease, now that these numbers are coming out, in the white population in the last 10 years, non-Hispanic white, 8% decrease on Long Island. So it's more diverse, but not less segregated. Judy in Port Washington, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I wanted to say that what I love about Port Washington is that we have all kinds going to the same school. Hello?
Uh-huh. Yeah, go ahead.
We have Sands Point, we have Harbor Homes, and we have everybody in between, which would be me. And at the moment, everyone's at the same school district. Everyone goes to the same high school. And what makes me nervous about the 2% tax cap, if that comes into play, I am very concerned that it will force the schools to make themselves worse, to live under the cap. And at that point, the rich people, the people who can, will send their kids to private school, and the rest will spiral down.
Judy, thank you. So, Elaine Gross, in our last few minutes, do you think the property tax cap would have any influence, positive or negative, on the racial segregation? I know nobody likes, you know, or a lot of people don't like the cap if their main concern is education spending. But in terms of the racial implications, are there any?
Well, there are in terms of those same school districts that we were talking about that are overwhelmingly black and Latino. They will be, they're being hurt by both the tax cap and also reduced funding from the state, because they do need more funding from the state because they don't have the tax base. And then with the tax cap along with that, the programs in those schools will be deeply hurt. The Port Washington caller, racially integrated schools are the best way to ensure more equal access to high-quality education. And as long as we keep the students separate in different school districts, it is much more difficult. And as we have seen from the stats, the statistics bear out that we end up with very different results.
And so the last thing, I gather that you and your group are pushing for changing the district boundaries. Explain.
Well, if we had fewer districts, rather than the 124, let's say we had districts by town. So we'd have some 15 districts by town and city. In those, we actually did the calculations. In those districts, you would not have concentrated poverty. You would have racially diverse districts. And as the last caller was talking about, you have more of an opportunity, rather than the statistics I started with, for all of those students being able to have access to the same high-quality program. That's the kind of situation in Rockville Center, where they have about 20% of the students are either black or Latino. And they actually did. They detracted their school. They had some racial integration in the districts, but they detracted the classes so that they had integration on the classroom level. And in fact, their test scores went up. Not only did the Black and Latino students close that achievement gap significantly, but the white students' test scores went up as well. So racially integrated schools can be a good thing. Unfortunately, the Westbury caller described what usually happens. We don't have racially integrated neighborhoods. You might just catch them while they're changing, mm-hmm. rapidly changing. Mm-hmm. So in Roosevelt, there was the same situation. It was a white community. Some blacks moved in, and with blockbusting and with racial steering, et cetera, it quickly changed from being all white to almost all black.
So where there is racial integration, you're saying, what that really is a neighborhood in transition from one thing to another.
That's what it has been historically. Now, hopefully, we can help change that by making sure that the schools stay sound, and what you described in terms of less money coming in from the state mm-hmm. and the property tax cap, et cetera, that is counterproductive.
The president of the Long Island Group, Erase Racism, Elaine Gross, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. Up next, the politics of other politicians' positions on Anthony Weiner. Stay with us. Thanks for listening to WNYC On Demand. Please check out our other programs at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This free service is made possible by our listeners. Become a member of WNYC today.